This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back-in-stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want, because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, "Hey, I want this, just not right now." Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswym.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. Today on the Unofficial Shopify Podcast, we're going to talk about the difference between B2B and wholesale. All right, I have lost half my audience with that statement, but if that resonates with you and you've been thinking like, man, there's got to be a better way to do my quoting process, my sales process, I'm narrowing this down even further to a niche audience. But if you have tried to do like enterprise level quoting in a strict B2B environment, because hold on, there's a difference between wholesale and B2B, I promise, that might be confusing, but we'll get into it. You'll discover that suddenly there are some limitations as you scale that process. I know this because we built a large B2B Shopify store for utility pipe supply last year and discovered, the unique problems with that setup on our own. And so joining me today, locally in studio, oh my gosh, I love folks who are local and can come record with me in person, is Dennis Dooley from Uncap, who does, similar to me, he's a Shopify partner, agency owner, but focuses exclusively on this B2B problem. And so we're going to get into it and talk through it with him. Dennis, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So we were just talking earlier, how long have you been a Shopify partner?
Since 2013. So it's almost 13 years. Shopify partner, Shopify expert back then, then Shopify Plus partner, then Shopify Premier, then Platinum at this point. So it has been a journey and a ride and a great experience and a pleasure. As we were just chatting earlier, it's good to know what we are passionate about and stick with that.
Yeah. Well, and just to your point earlier, before we started recording, is to find someone who has like worked in the same space, in the same business at this point for over a decade, that's unusual. And then the longer you stick with it, it becomes even more unusual. I have friends who it's like, I swear, I'm like, do you get a new job every 6 months? And like, people still hire you having seen your LinkedIn? Do they just assume like, well, we don't have a given raise because they'll be gone in 6 months? Oh, well, I digress. So, okay. We're talking about, I want to open with, there is a difference between B2B and wholesale. And that, for someone who is not experienced, is probably like a very confusing statement.
Sure.
What's the difference?
Let me start with the fact that like wholesale is B2B too. Like, it's not that we are talking about two different categories, but we are pretty much describing two different buying experiences. Wholesale is pretty much a brand who is selling direct to consumer. They want to create a new channel and start selling to mom and pop business directly. They can set up maybe another store, Shopify store, maybe use Shopify B2B capabilities and build a personalized experience with tier pricing, group pricing, payment terms, and everything. And it is something that most recently a lot of brands are doing. And pure B2B on the other side is all about processes that are completely that require a lot of hands holding throughout the journey. There is a process of approval. There is a process of reviewing, negotiating, then kind of finalizing what is the buyer on the other side wants, and does the supplier, the seller in the side of the merchant side, reviewing in the back end, like what prices do we have to offer? What is higher inventory that we can you know, add a further, you know, discount rate into that unique order or quote request. So it's a lot of like conversation. There are a lot of conversations that happen from the moment that the quote has been requested or the order has been initiated, the moment that the checkout. So that kind of lasts from hopefully one day to weeks. And it's, as we see it right now, that journey is all over the place. It happens in spreadsheets, on emails, phone calls, text messages, and it's completely decentralized. All of, you know, we have clients use faxes still, right? Like literally.
It is one of the few places you will still occasionally see faxes used.
So like, so that is pure B2B. It's more a relationship between the supplier and the buyer that accumulates with the final checkout in the end of the, you know, the order.
So, all right, if I think through an example,
right,
we have several retainer clients. All of them are primarily and first selling retail direct to consumer on an online store. So I'm selling tea, I'm selling polo shirts, I'm selling bags, purses, whatever. And then in addition to that, I bolt on a program where a person can apply as, you know, another business, and then they could buy in bulk, you know, with a minimum purchase and get a discount, and then they go resell it according to my terms. The key distinction here is that in those businesses, wholesale is always less than retail, is
correct,
always second.
Yes.
The other kind of business that we're referring to, you know, is either it almost for sure started and primarily is going to do B2B. You know, occasionally they'll have retail, but often they don't. It's like, look, it's just, there's a minimum. You got to meet it. It does not make sense for us to be selling, you know, to individual consumers. That's what Home Depot's for. And so like in our case, in my experience with this, I'm going to keep using this as my example because that's my lens. Utility Pipe Supply sells primarily to municipalities, to cities, right? It's like, hey, they're going to replace all the stoplights at an intersection. Somebody's got to, they're not making those parts, you know,
of course,
in Gurnee, Illinois or wherever. They're going to go get them.
100%.
And so there are businesses, distributors. Operate. I think that's like the key difference. The
correct.
Pure B2B business often is functionally a wholesale distributor, isn't it?
Correct. It's either a distributor or a manufacturer directly. So we have a ton of manufacturers that we are implementing Shopify. They are old school, but they see the value of going directly to consumer. So for example, a manufacturer who produces, you know, cabinets, right? They may still, you know, serve primarily to end consumer who are subcontractors, construction contractors, and so forth. But in that process of defining that order, end consumer is involved, right? The buyer itself is the contractor who is installing, implementing everything. But through that journey, the end buyer is also involved on part of that conversation, because the end consumer is picking the color, and end consumer is picking the finishes and whatnot, or we're formalizing the design, although the buyer itself is the contractor, right? So the contractor has the terms, the contractor has the discount, the contractor has the relationship, the contractor pays the bill in the end of the order, right? This is also the biggest growth that I see, and I want to like invest more uncapped towards, like mid-market manufacturers that are aiming to go directly to consumer, or mid-market distributors, because large distributors, they have different systems, proprietary systems like U.S. Food, Cisco, like these are, you know, they're there are huge,
someone like that.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I wish
has
but,
their own custom systems.
Correct,
I would
correct.
Think.
You would think, and they do have amazing systems, but, and I don't think they are looking for a platform. I mean, I could be wrong, but a platform, any of the platforms in the ecosystem to like go e-commerce, but mid-market, 20 million to 100 million, they are looking for solutions like that because they see the value of expanding their offer to smaller businesses, like through a direct, you know, buying experience. And also you were very correct. I'm sorry, I'm going further in this. Like we have a dozen of clients that have a beautiful storefront on Shopify, and they don't even display any of the prices. You have to log in to see anything that is enabled primarily because they can't show the prices, because they have contracts with manufacturers that they cannot display for the public, because they are not the same price as you get to the retail store and so forth. So there are more complex nuances of just like the fact that it's B2B commerce. It's like legal complications, process complications, vetting complications, and also approval. Somebody has like a different team is paying, a different team is making the order, a different person is reviewing everything. And so like it's way more all over the place.
And what's interesting is risk profile changes as well.
Correct.
You know, if I'm a merchant and I get a fraud order for $500 that I fulfilled, okay, that's painful. I don't want that. But if I'm in one of these huge stores, or a big B2B store, a $50,000 order, $100,000 order, like, man, that's a different ball game, right? It just changes the nature of the relationship. And the chances are stuff like that, it's not happening over credit card, of course.
We have a client whom we onboarded about 2 years ago. They sell tools. They are the regional distributor. I can't name the name, but it's in the website somewhere. They are regional distributors of in the United States. They sell pools. Like the smallest order is there like $30,000-$50,000. The literally the starting point of the order, and so yeah, you can guess that they're not processing with the credit card. But when they sell accessories, even accessories are like high ticket items, and the risk is very high.
Yeah, and so okay. I think we figured out the distinction here between B2B and wholesale and really established like how different it gets for these pure B2B businesses. One of the interesting things about B2B, it is typically not sexy. And because of that, I think maybe agencies are less willing to work with it, right? Like agencies often are design focused and they want to make these pretty portfolios. And like, man, a B2B website is going to be one of the least sexy things you ever put together, assuming you did it right. Is that, are those businesses underserved, or are we just not exposed? Am I just not exposed to, the agencies, consultants, whatever, that serve these B2B businesses within, this landscape?
Yeah. So they are underserved, although there are, agencies who are trying to tap or working to tap into this market. So we're not alone. And I'm so happy for that the Shopify itself as an ecosystem is moving towards these verticals. But I remember it was 2019. It was a competition among Shopify agencies, and so it was a competition. Who was the agency that did more Magento migration at that quarter was invited to speak at headquarters of Shopify. So we did. We were lucky, and we were very good at that quarter. I remember vividly. I made this comment on the stage that.
So you got to talk.
I got to talk.
We were like four Magento agencies. Sucks.
Yeah. Boom. I've been saying that for 5 years. I have a lot of frenemies out there that we just debate every weekly basis in LinkedIn. But the comment that I did was that, and mind you, Shopify B2B wasn't an offer at that point.
Yeah.
Remember, it was Shopify Wholesale, which didn't work, right? Literally didn't work. We would have to bring apps and custom solutions and custom themes to build a portal and whatnot. And I made this comment on stage that my dream would be when Shopify prioritized working with underserved, unsexy businesses that when we speak with, they value Shopify's capabilities even more than direct-to-consumer brands. Because direct-to-consumer brands, as we talked to, they are focused on, creative work and design and beauty and all of that. And Shopify rocks, but kind of they don't appreciate the infrastructure that is behind, like the security, the reliance, the, the fact that it's up and live most of the time. Like it's not Magento. You wake up at middle of night and it's not working, right? And you need to call 10 people to make it work, and a priest, hopefully, to make a wish. And this part of reliability and efficiency is not something that D2C has taken for granted, but B2B appreciates more because their business is way more impacted if the infrastructure goes down for a day or two or three. It's not just a 5-minute downtime. And so I used to have these conversations 7 years ago, 8 years ago, with brands that sells like suppliers and microfiber supplies, janitorial supplies, all these kind of like unsexy brands. Like, why Shopify is not building these capabilities for us? Like, even barely a tier pricing function in the front end for just price breaks, right? Like the bare minimum. And so, like, I don't know. I hope so. I was pushing the product team at Shopify, everybody I knew, like, can we please, you know, have this conversation, just like pinging everybody. Can you add this? It's important. It's critical because this is the only blocker that why they're not going with Shopify. Everything else, they love it. And so I'm so like, you know, it's, to me, it's like a hit in the kindergarten to see the product releases in every week for B2B specific, like ACH transactions. And
Shopify Plus, Shopify Plus, you get these B2B features. Correct. And recently they include ACH, vaulted payments, quantity breaks, correct, you know, was one of the things. Pricing lists, right?
Exactly. Or all these increments, you know, maximum.
Yeah, you max and min and increment rate. If it's like, okay, we got to put this in a case of six, so you can only buy it in units of six. But it's mix and match.
And mix and match. But also the units that sells. Like, you can sell on a unit now. And
I just saw that this week.
That's amazing. But these are like what these B2B businesses need, because some of them are selling, you know, for example, materials. Like, we had a brand 4 or 5 years ago that was selling, you know, paint powders for car paint.
You mix, like, a real pro person mixes the color there to get it to match.
But it's not sold on like unit. It's sold on pounds or
fluid
on weight, right? Like how can we? Okay, well, what is if I put quantity over there hypothetically 1 pound? Well, a client may want 1.25 pounds. How can I split that pound if I don't have that unit? So this is the level of complexity that increases.
Man, those order change emails suck. They're always like, I ordered the wrong size. I meant to change the shipping address. Oops, I was drunk. Instead of making customers email you that stuff, let them fix it themselves with Cleverific. Cleverific is a self-service portal that lets customers edit their orders without bugging you. That means you get fewer headaches, customers get faster fulfillment, and there's fewer returns overall. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their support tickets by 99% with Cleverific. You want in on that? Get 50% off the pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Done. Problem solved. That's Cleverific. So, okay, that's what I want to get into is I want to agitate the pain. I want to get specific. I want to know what the core problems that we got to solve for are. And what we have these people who want to use Shopify are like, yes, absolutely, I want to use this. And in many cases are willing to work around some of the current limitations with the assumption that we'll figure out a better solution in the future. Maybe it gets solved by Shopify themselves, but either way, you know, we have a net benefit. But that doesn't mean there aren't limitations. There aren't, when you've got these fairly esoteric workflows and huge catalogs with these bespoke necessities in them. So walk me through some of that.
So I want to start with the fact that there is no platform in the world that would serve everybody. Like, are always, like, either you have to compromise, or there is a gap between what you wish to have and what you can have. It's something you can live with. But, like, you know, like everything else, like, you want a dream car, but always is going to have something that you hate in that dream car. It is what it is. So that goes with Shopify and any other platform. That aside, the Shopify is going towards, like, the Shopify movement itself or go-to-market motion is going towards, you know, unified commerce. It's just blending B2B and B2C together for what we talked for, primarily for wholesale. They have like 6 million brands that sells direct to consumer. How can we help them create another channel so they can start selling directly to and small mom and pop businesses or to other businesses on volume. This is one vertical that serves pretty much 90% of the Shopify's audience. And for that, you know, there are plenty of apps that are available. There are plenty of, you know, Shopify B2B upgrade offers a ton of capabilities. You can build like a lot of things with apps that are either available or custom apps that you can integrate. For the brands that they want to build the wholesale, you can build almost everything with custom theme functionalities. You can build them with apps that are available, or you can build them with apps, private apps that you can develop exclusive for your own stores. So they are
owner and those of one. Are often like those take the form of simple Python script, right? Like that stuff you can often get away with. Like, hey, we just need one custom thing solved for us. Exactly. Do it. And so I have, like, when you walked in, I was running scripts in Terminal, and it was for a client that has wholesale added to their store, and we came up with logic for how to build the pricing lists because they are a wholesale distributor, right. And so they're adding like new parts add all the time, and pricing changes all the time. A person can't go through and update all that, and in the Shopify B2B pricing lists, it's a spreadsheet. And it itself does not have logic to handle that. And so what we ended up doing, like creating just Python script connects to Shopify API, goes in, and then it knows based on the list, like, okay, this is the discount. And then I forgot what the exact premise we used, but it was like, oh, yeah, it's we know what the discount should be. So say it's 20%. Discount every price 20%. Then if it is less, it's got to be less than compare at price to make sense. Or compare at price times 20, you know, reduce it by 20%. And then, hey, is that less or more than the retail price? If it's more, then just default to the retail price as that becomes the discount. Yeah. Because otherwise, it's like, you know, you got 100,000 products and the prices change regularly because it's all different vendors. And so you can't have, you know, it's just not reasonable for a person to do it. But that's just like one example of a thing. It's like, okay, now I've got like this bespoke rule set. Now here's the problem. They don't know how to run it. We know how to run it because, like, I'm very comfortable with the command line interface. Okay, now they're like, hey, we'll run this once a month. Well, now it's like, hey, could you just have this run every 72 hours? Because the business is expanding and growing.
Of course.
And so now I'm like, all right, you know, maybe we've hit the limitation. Maybe now I need a better solution here.
Of course. From our perspective, in most cases, the kind of like the legacy brands, they already have that spreadsheet on their ERP. We all have to integrate and kind of like build a pipe data synchronization between what they have in the ERP, convert that based on how Shopify catalogs and primitives are supported, and then display these prices to the customers after they log in based on where they are assigned to. But most of the time, that logic happens in the ERP level, right? Unless they don't have an ERP, and then we build apps like that. The whole transaction is between two businesses, suppliers and the buyer. So the supplier is selling on bulk, on discount, on terms, on prices, and all of that. And the buyer on the other side is just not one person. There are multiple people. There are people who are approving the order. There are people who are reviewing the order, requesting changes, and so forth. And then, in addition to that, we have the CPQ component, which is like
CPQ. All right, what's CPQ stand for?
Yeah, CPQ stands for configurable pricing quotings. So it's just three components, like configurable products, price alignment, and also quoting engagement between the buyer and the seller and that relationship.
So is that a good example of a CPQ product? I am ordering a laptop from Apple. And now I'm an institutional buyer. I'm ordering 1,000 laptops from Apple. And now I'm going to tell them, hey, these are our specs. This is what we need. Because a laptop is not a laptop, right? How much memory in it? How much RAM, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay. All right. That's my example of a CPQ.
And yes, but also in addition to that, it's just not, we are not just configuring a product. The end results on that configuration could be a bill of material. It's not even just one product. It's a list of 10 items that bundle that product, that laptop that you're buying with battery, with the box and this and this and that. Each of these items, they have different prices that are assigned to you as a buyer. And also, maybe some of them are not on stock. Some of them are in the inventory. Some of them are supplied by a third-party supplier that the seller has to like resource and then pack it and send it to you. So there is, again, way more complex. Yeah. Relationship is just like the easiest part is to build a configurable experience of the website. Sell a yeah. color and blah, blah, blah.
Which that's not even that easy.
That's not even easy. Exactly. That in itself is a pain.
Yeah, when people are like, oh, let's do a product configurator. I'm like, oh, please don't.
Please don't. And the problem with product configurables, especially for Shopify experience, is that the configurables create dummy products in the back end for every combination that you are creating. Because you cannot check out if the product is not in the back end. If the product, let's say you have color, size, material, you know, dimensions, and so forth, all these combinations are going to generate a fake or like a sort of draft product in the back end.
Yeah.
That when you check out, it's generated in a line item, then you pay for it, and then you save it. Well, how is this draft product being aligned to the catalog pricings that you have assigned to you personally? How can I give you?
Oh, right. Because every person,
in theory,
has custom pricing.
Not in theory. In practice, has to have custom prices. So that product that is being generated automatically, it has a price that the combinations just generated, but it's the retail price.
Oh boy!
So
you quickly get into like how complex this thing gets.
That's the complexity we are trying to solve here.
So if I'm on B2B, my issues become like giant catalog. So product information management. I have never used a PIM. That there are tools built for this, a PIM. And so often it's like, you got to find and get the data. So data entry. All right, when we did utility pipe supply, that was like the big competitive advantage unlock was no one else was willing to do the work and build the darn catalog as a Shopify catalog. That was just manual labor and they did it. And so, okay, we've got it there. But now you got to maintain the thing going over time. And so that's where it's like, all right, we need a tool system, some way to manage that. And that's where like people start using PIMs, product information management. And then we have, and like the Shopify catalog itself is a PIM, and with an API, we could plug stuff into it. Okay. And then we've got like all our custom pricing that happens, you know, in theory in Shopify through B2B pricing. And then we have, associated rules with that. Then we have custom products that got to be quoted. Okay, that's harder. Typically, it's like, you know, in Shopify, we might make a draft order and just someone arbitrarily could write in a price.
Correct.
But it's not going to be tied back into the inventory. Like,
it's very unfriendly experience.
And for us, you know, the part where we found like, oh, this is where it starts to struggle is the sales process. Because in B2B, it's like someone reaches out to you. And they say, hey, I saw, on the site, I'm a current customer, I've applied, I'm approved. Here's my list, right? Here's everything I need for our project. And so now a sales rep has to go through, verify availability, verify pricing, and then give them a quote and say, okay, we can get you this stuff by this date for this price on these terms. And then the person, that's a proposal. And then the person says, you know, yes, no. So I received my purchase order. Or request for quote, I provide it, it gets approved, and then our regular process happens. Now I want to scale that up. I need multiple sales reps. I need a CRM. I need a way, and like a sales-focused CRM. Shopify is a CRM, but it's like that's very much email-focused, contact-focused. I need to be able to track a sales process and a pipeline on these leads with and for a business like that, a team of probably multiple sales reps.
Right.
Okay, I tried every app that was out there. We couldn't get one that was great. You know, they all did the job of the invoicing or getting the quote in, but nothing was perfect. Nothing did, quite what we wanted here. Man, I'm sure this has been your experience as well. How are you solving for this stuff?
Yeah, well, it has been like a painful experience for a very long time. And different businesses, different problems. But what I have noticed is that when we bring online, and I'm going to answer the question directly, but when we bring online a self-serving experience for B2B, there is always that desire and passion and early stage of adaption where we're going to go all big on it. We're going to bring all the customer to the self-serving. We're going to reduce the sales need and blah, blah, blah. And when the reality hit is that maybe 30% will go to the self-serving adoption, maybe if they're lucky, but majority of customers are used to sending emails. They're using to sending texts. They're used to sending WhatsApp messages. They're used to send to calling, all of that. How do we synchronize that with commerce, with the commerce component where we kind of like dance that we are replying to them via the channel that they want to, but that engagement itself happens still in the e-commerce and the storefront. And so gradually we are luring them towards being a self-serving adapting to the self-serving gradually. So like, we do reduce that friction, not in one day, but over time. Like, so that's the problem that I've seen. And that's the problem we are solving the platform that we have developed. That we demo to you. So it is the platform that we are building that solves the problems that you outline better than I could, allows merchants that are sales-led organizations, that they always do sales with sales team. They have the e-commerce, or they may want to invest in the e-commerce, but they still rely on these personal relationships. Aggregate all orders, quote requests, POs, name, invoices, aggregate them in one centralized database, one CRM, where every salesperson have access. And through emerging technologies, AI, whatever, we are converting these orders to line items that map exactly the final orders that they want to send for approval to the end consumer, to the buyer. And but also, in that, we bring context. Who is this customer? What was the last time this customer purchased? What was the price that we gave this buyer last time that they bought this specific product? Or if the product that they are asking for is out of stock, what are the replacements? So all these contexts. Also, in addition to that, like, what else we can recommend them to upsell? And that is in the deal room that we are building. Outside from the front end, when they go and see and view that quote and start to negotiate and review and send requests and comments, everything happens in the self-serving portal. But in the back end, in our deal room, AI is giving the salesperson all the ammo they need to nail it, to bring the most advantage information, so they can win and convert that order to that quote to an order. And so that's what I've been like using AI, but also bringing all the experiences that we have accumulated over, again, a decade doing this. I think we have a great product and we're excited.
So hold on. I think I missed the big reveal here. You having built these solutions on Shopify for over a decade now, in the past, were you solving for issues with like custom portals, custom apps?
Custom apps, custom themes, custom portals, like one problem at a time. And then now we take it to the next level. We build a platform that touches like 90% of these problems in one deal room and solves almost all of these problems with a better user experience, fully integrated systems with Shopify's B2B primitives, but more than that, using AI as a supercharge to allow the salesperson make decision quickly. Instead of typing, entering data, instead of like going to the, let me give you how the world.
Yeah, so much of this, that job role ends up being data entry.
Almost all the organizations that we work today, they run the CPQ on the ERP. Here's a question. Have you logged in on an Oracle ERP?
No, I've logged into NetSuite, and even that was scary.
Please log in Oracle. It's 1997.
Yep.
Right? Not only it's...
Those
it's
ERPs like, are dated.
Yes. Not only is this pain in the ass, it takes a lot of time just to go from one place to another, to another, to another. Now, I get it. It's like robust database and all of that. I'm not saying it's a bad product. I'm just saying it's not user-friendly. It's not at all something that any salesperson want to work. The salesperson is incentivized to move fast because they are most of the time paid on commission. It's for him, it's a waste of time, like trying to figure out or search the product in the ERP and then go to the customer and see the price and orders, 30 clicks to even just figure out what they need to provide. Not that we are inventing.
Man, I quit that job.
Correct. But this is how I've seen this in action. And the reason why, and also we have clients that large organizations, like huge enterprises, $200-300 million companies, and say, our salespeople don't even want to be in the ERP at all because they find it like, hey, here's the email. They send it to the assistant, to the operation admin to enter everything because I don't want to waste my time on that. And then one order is confirmed by phone by the salesperson, printed, maybe handwriting, give it to the assistant, follow up with it. We are not in 1997, right? It doesn't have to be that way. It has to be the vision that I have for the platform is a tool for the sales team that gives them everything possible with a fraction of a minute to make a decision and complete that transaction. Or at least send it for negotiation, send it for review within minutes. That's the vision I have for the platform. And that will accelerate from hours to minutes. And then that also will bring the quote to cash timeline from 2 weeks to hopefully 2 days. Because again, you're expediting the reply with minutes. And also you have everything in one dashboard and you have everything in one deal room. So you know what to follow up, you know what to do, you know what to touch.
Hey, today's episode is sponsored in part by Zipify Plus. Because you've got enough to do as a business owner and marketer, the last thing you need to be worried about is optimizing your upsells. But if they're not optimized, you're leaving up to 20% of your revenue on the table every single month. So be honest, did you start a new batch of split tests on your upsells this week? Of course not. Real optimization requires constant attention, running tests, launching offers, reading reports, adjusting for sales. Your team's too busy for all that. Zipify Plus takes over your upsells completely. You get a dedicated team that builds, manages, and optimizes your upsells for you. They work with over 100 Shopify Plus stores. Their average client sees $233,000 a year in extra revenue without lifting a finger. If you can't remember the last time you updated your upsells, go to Zipify.com/USP to book a free strategy call today. Their team will audit your store and show you exactly where you're leaving money on the table. No commitment required. That's Zipify.com/USP because you've got enough to do without worrying about upsells too. So let's think through it. Let's walk through it. Deal comes in. In the past, it was like, if I'm lucky, I got a RFQ, request for quote, that like maps to actual SKUs. Now I have to convert that to draft order invoice and add custom pricing to it as the sales rep, send it off. I probably have to enter this into a CRM so I can track where it lives. And then, I got to follow up, try to get it paid, and then reconcile inventory when I get this thing shipped. There, if I was lucky, there was only some manual work with that, but for sure there was some manual work with that. You demoed your solution for me, which looked really cool. And you called it, you referred to the deal room. But in that demo, it's like request for quote comes in and it could just be an email with a PDF. And then you used, this was so clever, AI, you tied it into some LLM's API that one button click, it can extract what they're talking about. It's fairly formatted. It's not too terrible for an AI to understand this. Then since it is plugged into the catalog, into Shopify's catalog, can find the items and then just immediately one click it built out, oh, this is the purchase order. But now it lives inside my new CRM, Dennis's deal room.
It identify based on the email address or the phone number of that request, whether that being sent by email or text or WhatsApp, whatever. If that buyer is already in the system and it's already assigned to a catalog and a price list and a location, it automatically auto-populate that that quote with prices that are assigned to this customer. Now you can edit them, you can add a discount, you can do whatever you want, but you don't have to do anything. It's already done for you. It's just one click. All what you need to do is review it. You have the PDF. You can see if there's any request or file or Excel or what, or if it's just a order review. Make any adjustment if there is need to be any adjustment, and send it to them for approval. But you send it to the person based on the information you have. One person can have approval. Another person can have just review. Another person can have the ability to negotiate. Another person can have that. It's a multi-to-multi experience. While also in the deal room, you can bring your sales team. You need an approval from a sales admin that the client is asking, the buyer is asking for a request for a discount on shipping, because probably shipping is sometimes more than the products themselves, because heavy products. So this is like, oh, I'm not going to pay like $5,000 in the shipping. I'm buying tarps, right? Hypothetically. So like, can you give a discount? But you cannot make that decision, because it impacts what are the rates and the discounts that you get from the shipping. So maybe you need an approval, and so you can bring the sales team in the, as you would do in a CRM for lead gen and relationship with the client. But in this case, it's all about that draft order, that order that has been created for this purpose. And a lot of other things that I showed you, but this is just...
What's the name of this thing?
UNCAP.
Okay.
This is alpha version, and our goal is to have a soft launch by Q2, and then rebrand the website to like the content of the website more towards the product and towards the capabilities and features. It has been always my dream to build a product. I've attempted multiple times, launched multiple apps, some successful, some not. But at this time, I'm a believer that this is going to be extremely impactful, but also because of the motion of Shopify's go-to-market towards these verticals, it's just a momentum and a time that it's kind of like stars are aligned, right? And I'm betting on it. It's a risk, right? But I have a good feeling that this is going to be it. It's my dream come true. So,
you know, my feeling has always been you build products that solve pains or problems.
Correct.
And they're not all going to be equally valuable, but if you start there, you know, and you could empathize and you could build and you know the space, and then you could build the solution. Cause like there's so many little nuances here. You know, I've built one store that had these problems, and immediately the value of what you built was obvious to me. But then, you know, watch it. You demoed it for me before we did this call. And even in that, it's like all the nuance that I was unaware of starts to immediately become obvious seeing in the solution you built.
Yeah. And also keep in mind that this industry is also changing. And so we are just adapting with all the changes that are happening in a kind of like every day. I see new capabilities, new features that we need to adapt.
It's AI.
It's AI changing everything. So like while it's changing, let's change with it. Let's do something that is like avant-garde, that I have no illusion that this product will take about 2-3 years for people to really understand it. Like I have no illusion, because it's a huge gap between how the situation is and how we are making it to be. Like even if I bring it to a customer and we have demo it, it's like they are shocked how amazing it is. But like how can I bring that to the team? Like it's, we have all these pieces together. It's change management and it's like adaption, and I understand that. I'm aware of that, but I'm building for the future. I'm not building, I have no illusion that I'm launching tomorrow. I'm going to have like 10,000 paid customers tomorrow. I probably don't want to, even if they are ready. I'm not ready. I want to build something that is very impactful. And also to add to what you just said is, it's not that I woke up a beautiful Sunday and said, you know, I have this idea. How about if I build it? No, it's just building solutions to painful problems and like kind of like blending them on one unified experience.
Yeah, there was so much effort that goes into that, where you did like Boolean logic, which is like if then else logic. It's cool.
Look at the situation right now. You bring a CPQ platform like Logic, for example, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? I'm naming the names, but you need an IT team or a development team to create a configurable.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with our industry? Because a configurable itself has to be something, a product configurable has to be something that sales team can create as easy as they are creating a templated email, right? Because maybe they are creating configurable only for one specific use case or one specific offer or one specific request. And it's impossible right now because you have to go to IT, it takes like a week, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But my thesis is that configurable, and by that also in assigning with prices, it's a function of sales, not a function of IT. And that's the bet that I'm going to make with a business, with the whole business, is that I'm going to go at the, you know, really sort of in a aggressive pattern of kind of arguing with whoever can argue me wrong that configurable is not, like who want to argue that configurable is an IT utility. It's not. It has configurable pricing quotas. It's a sales team. It has to be part of a CRM, period. And has to be fully integrated with e-commerce experience because that's where the clients are. You meet them where they are. You don't wildly pretend that they want to go where you want them to go.
Yeah. No, it's tough, especially with, you know, dealing with organizations and teams that big, you know, and like all this technical debt and legacy systems and practices. And so, yeah, you have to look for those opportunities to help, you know, lead a horse to water. I want to look back at your journey. It's 2026. You are launching this, you know, this big enterprise product. That's really cool. 2013, you start as a Shopify partner. Before then, you're working out of an internet cafe in Albania. Right?
Yeah. Before that, I worked at another agency here in Chicago, Plumtree Group. I was a technical lead for Magento development. It was a Magento shop. And then when I quit, I started Pivify. That was the original name that we rebranded about 3 years ago. And the purpose of rebranding was we're planning to build a product that at that time, to be completely frank, it was a PIM system, by the way. Like that was the, and then I realized that it's a problem, but it may not have the addressable market that I dreamed for. So it's a painful problem, but there are also players and it didn't have was not suitable for the dream that I had to build a product that I wanted. This one is the iteration of that came to life at this point. And before that, I came here in US to study in 2011 to get my master's. But before that, I used to do like websites for, you know, small business in a cafe. You know, that was the lifestyle back then. It's just can't believe how everything has evolved from there. But it's an amazing journey. I'm so thankful that I am living this time. I'm part of this ecosystem. And I get to meet people like you. That's more than anything. This is why I'm grateful. Is the people that I've had the chance to meet throughout this journey, more than anything.
It is. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. You know, just we know a lot of the same people, but it's international, right? We're talking about, you're like, oh yeah, I was just talking to Jay Myers last week. Me too, you know, but he's in Winnipeg.
Exactly. So it's like amazing, good-hearted spirit, experts that have been like Amr that we're just like talking about him earlier, that have been so close to me in my hardest times in business, that I needed a sort of like quote unquote shoulder to cry. He was there. Although we were competing each other in some deals and we were kind of frenemies in one way. But in the darkest side, we were there for each other.
Yeah.
And we are still like very close friends.
Yeah. Mary Krasdanek, Prella.
Prella. So like, what do you want more? Like literally, that's what I'm thankful. Like, yes, it has made a good living for me and financial. All of that is awesome. But this is impressive.
You know, and to your point, how we met, Andrew Udarian from E-Commerce Fuel was in the area and said, hey, do you want to get dinner? And I'll see if I can find somebody else. It was the three of us. We ended up having dinner. It was good. All right. Dennis Dooley from UNCAP. If we want to learn more about you and your product, where are we going?
So uncap.com. That's the website.
Thanks for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.